Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 11. Just get out of that Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 11, text number 6. Amagyan Jmiranjisha Jmiranjana Slakaya. Talk to you with the tongue, you know. Tasman Shi Yuravinda Maha. Dukkham Sukkham Vyakti Tam Chati Dram. Kalopapanam Pala Avyanakti. Alingyamaya Rachit Rachitantaratma.
Alingyamaya Rachitantaratma.
Sraddehinam Samsriti Chakrakuttaha.
Sraddehinam Samsriti Chakrakuttaha.
Dukkham Sukkham Yathirittam Chatidram.
Dukkham Sukkham Yathirittam
Kalopam phalam avinakti.
Kalopam phalam avinakti.
Alingyam maya rachitantaratma.
Alingyam maya rachitantaratma.
Sadehinam samsriti chakrakuttaha.
Sadehinam samsriti chakrakuttaha.
Dukkham,
dukkham,
unhappiness due to impious activities.
Unhappiness due to impious activities.
Sukkham,
sukkham,
happiness due to pious activities.
Happiness due to pious activities.
Yatiriktam,
yatiriktam,
illusion,
illusion.
Cha,
cha,
also,
also.
Tifram,
tifram,
very severe,
very severe.
Kala upapanam,
obtained in the course of time.
Palam,
palam,
the resultant action. Avyanakti, creates. Alingya, embracing. Mayarachitta, created by material nature. Anta Atma,
Anta Atma,
the mind,
the mind.
Sadehinam,
the living being himself,
Samsmriti,
Samsmriti,
of the actions and reactions of material existence,
of the actions and reactions of material existence.
Chakrakuta,
Chakrakuta,
which deceives the living entity into the wheel,
which deceives the living entity into the wheel.
Translation. The materialistic mind covering the living entity's soul carries it to different species of life. This is called continued material existence. Due to the mind, the living entity suffers or enjoys material distress and happiness. Being thus illusion, the mind further creates pious and impious activities and their karma, and thus the soul becomes conditioned. Accord by Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Material activities under the influence of material nature cause happiness and distress within the material world. So mental activities under the influence of material nature cause happiness and distress within the material world. Being covered by illusion, the living entity eternally continues conditioned life under different designations. Such living entities are known as Nityabhata, eternally conditioned. On the whole, the mind is the cause of conditioned life. Therefore, the entire yogic process is meant to control the mind and the senses. If the mind is controlled, the senses are automatically controlled, and therefore the soul is saved from the reactions of pious and impious activity. If the mind is engaged with the lotus feet of the Lord, Sarvayamanaha Krishna Padara Vindayo, the senses are automatically engaged in the Lord's service. When the mind and senses are engaged in devotional service, the living entity naturally becomes Krishna conscious. As soon as one always thinks of Krishna, he becomes a perfect yogi, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Yoginam Abhisavesham Madhvatin Antaratma. This Antaratma, the mind, is conditioned by material nature. As stated here, Maya Rachit Antaratma Sva Dehinam Samsuti Chakraputaha. The mind, being the most powerful, covers the living entity and puts him in the waves of material existence. So, in this particular section, Jagrata is replying to the king, King Kahuna. So the king has spoken some apparently knowledgeable sentences, put a few thoughts together from the Vedas, as people often do, and Jagrata has basically replied that he's speaking foolishly. So, and of course this is, he's probably not speaking as foolishly as many people speak today in the Book of Vedas, or any other scripture. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada says, the devil is quoting scripture. So, some mischievous person is quoting some scripture, some of them. So, the books of knowledge, the Vedas, are not easily understood. The other day someone was asking me, you know, we were discussing a marriage, what's in the shirt on? Some things they like, some things they don't like. And he was saying, explain to me this. I explain it in simple terms. I want to know in the Vedas, you know, the exact statements. I see. So the Vedas are like this, that Einstein presents his theory of relativity equals mc squared. So I said the Vedas are like that. So you go ahead and read the knowledge is there. But I will give you the reference. What good will it do? So, you know, the Vedas are studied and taught, and the knowledge is distributed by the most intelligent class of men because it is the highest level of knowledge. We find that. That system is natural in the universities around the world. If someone is doing a doctorate to be become a professor of some branch of knowledge, they are being tutored by the most intelligent teachers that we can, you know, we have. So that is natural. So the Vedas are like that. They are in the hands of Brahmins whose lives are dedicated to Vedic knowledge. They practice the teachings. Of course, if they don't practice the teachings, then they're not qualified Brahmins. They're called Dvijabandhu, or, you know, they're associated somehow or another by birth or what have you with Brahmins, but the qualifications of the Brahmana are not really there. So, Vedic knowledge has a particular purpose, and that purpose is understood by those who know the highest level of understanding of the Vedas, not the beginning of it. So in other words, they know all the Vedas and the final conclusion, and anyone who comes to needs to understand Vedic knowledge, they understand through people who have that overall complete understanding of the Vedas. That's the best way. If we understand a topic without understanding the theme, the purpose, the goal, the mood, we will not understand it. It's something like, you know, we've all had the experience, you walk up to a couple of friends, they're having a conversation, you hear one sentence, and you've got a completely different picture of what they're talking about. But of course, you know, they're confidentially talking about something which is not for everyone's ears. And so, you know, you really can't, even sometimes they continue to talk, they really don't want you to know, and you're standing right there, you still won't understand what they're discussing. So, so Vedic knowledge is, so this is what is being pointed out by Jagarat to Maharaj Rupa. So that's what we're going to discuss. What is the purpose of the Vedas? What is the goal of the Vedas? And how do we follow all the varieties of branches of Vedic knowledge for all different levels of people and not lose sight of the goal or the thing of the Vedas? Do they have a purpose? If the goal of the Vedas is not immediately being obtained by following the beginning stages of the Vedic knowledge, you just not bother. So all these things we have to understand. Or do they, are they very important? Do they have a connection that we, according to our level, they will be helpful? So this topic is taken up. Of course, let's just give the conclusion just from the beginning. So, as Prabhupada often does, in his purport, the Prabhupada has done that for us, that he has explained. The entire yogi process is meant to control the mind and the senses. So that's one thing. So that's there are different levels of yoga. For those who are completely on the mundane physical platform of enjoying heavenly, you know, pleasures in this world or the next, there is a yogi process. It's one of the beginning rungs, karma yoga. That can lead into a spiritual version of karma yoga by adding the ultimate purpose of life. But otherwise it's on a mature platform. There are three transcendental processes, and that is jnana yoga, studying the difference between matter and spirit, trying to understand the self. There's a Sangha yoga, trying to meditate upon the Supreme Self and the Self, and Bhakti yoga, meditating on the personality of Godhead. So this is the whole process of different realms, and they're all meant to control the mind and the senses. So that is. So, what has been explained in this particular verse of Srimad Bhagavatam is that if we follow the Vedas according to our attachments and aversions on the mental platform, that means the mind is still somewhat uncontrolled, not fixed on the self, the Supreme Self, to some degree. To that point, we're either wasting our time, unless we're trying to progress to that point, to that goal. So we're trying to control the mind and senses, that is the whole Vedic yoga process, the whole Vedic process. But some people follow the Vedic processes to the degree that their mind has some attachments and aversions due to happiness and distress. And that way of following the Vedas is not very productive, and ultimately if one stays on that process, one just remains in the material world. Therefore, in summary, the Vedas have followed all the Vedic processes. They're all mentioned in summary in chapter 4 of the Bhagavad Gita, all the different Vedic processes. They involve two basic principles to help control the mind is detachment. Detachment means sacrifice of something for that. For some higher purpose. If we're sacrificing material possessions or pleasures temporarily for greater material facility, that is one process. The other process is that we make sacrifices in pursuit of transcendental knowledge of the self. And then higher than that, we make sacrifices in pursuit of transcendental knowledge of the Supreme Self. That is the proper way to go through the Vedas. Not according to our attachment and aversion on any level, but for that one purpose of coming to the full knowledge of the Self and the Supreme Self. That is the way to go through the Vedic process. So, in that regard, so that is the way to actually control the mind. So, in that regard, one is always trying to get off the platform of attachment and aversion and come back to the, get off the platform of the mind, which is keeping this in conditioned life, and come to the point transcendental to the mind, where the soul, we are seeking knowledge of the soul beyond the material mind. Now, what Srila Prabhupada says, again giving the conclusion, he'll give the summary right from where we begin so we don't get lost, is that and what he says, you know, we'll discuss these point by point, but if the mind is controlled, the senses are automatically controlled, and therefore the soul is safe from the reactions of pious and impious activities. So the result of attachment and aversion, either on the process of karma, jnana, or yoga, if attachment and aversion is there, it will implicate us to take another body. And we will be engaged in some pious or impious activities accordingly. To save us from that, Prabhupada says that if the mind is engaged with the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, Savayamanaha Krishna Padava Gunayor, the senses are automatically engaged in the Lord's service. When the mind and senses are engaged in devotional service, the living entity naturally becomes Krishna conscious, God conscious. As soon as one always thinks of Krishna, he becomes a perfect yogi, as is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Yoganam Visavisham Madhvitenam Padasana. And then one becomes, by Krishna consciousness, devotional service, one becomes the perfect yogi, where one is above the material mind, which is attracted by attachment and aversion, happiness and distress, and therefore one is saved from taking another body to engage in either impious or pious activities as a karma yoga, jnana yoga, or sangha yoga, which are all considered different pious activities. So that's a summary. That's a summary of what Jagrat is saying. So let's have a look at some of those factors which are mentioned all throughout the Vedas, and which Krishna also, he gives us this summary information in the Bhagavad Gita, and that's the beauty of it. He summarizes all, the result of all the processes of yoga and their purposes and everything like that. So let's start from chapter 15, which is targeted toward an understanding of the purpose of the Vedas. So in verse number 1 of chapter 15, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, said, "It is said that there is an imperishable banyan tree that has its roots upward and its branches down, and whose leaves are the Vedic hymns. One who knows this tree is the knower of the Vedas." So this tree, which is upside down, and therefore it is understood that this tree is a reflection of a real tree. The real tree is on the bank, and this upside tree is a reflection of the tree situated on the water. That reflected tree, that illusory reality, is a symbol, a representation of this material world. And that material world is also symbolic of all the activities we perform, either pious or impious, which are defined within the Vedic mantras, the Vedic hymns. So whenever we chant the Gayatri, we chant the prayers, Om Guru Vaha Swaham, that the beginning of material creation comes from sound. So this whole material existence comes from first the subtle elements, sound, originating from Lord Brahma. So as we see, the root is at the top, which means that this material existence begins from Brahma Loka, who is the secondary creator of this material world, and through the chanting of the Vedic mantras, Om, Bhur, Vaha, from Om, actually comes gradually the manifestation through sound of the material world, gradually expands the different elements and the different creations, higher, lower, and upper planetary systems. So this the Vedic hymns are non-different to the subtle origin of material existence, and also therefore we can see that all the activities we perform in this material world, this tree represents the material world, and also represents the Vedas. those who follow the Vedas or books of knowledge which define what activities we should and shouldn't perform in this world, those who follow those books of knowledge, if they follow books of Shastra, religious scriptures, for the purpose of fulfilling their attachment and aversion, then this tree represents how they become continually entangled in material existence. So the green leaves represent the Vedic hymns. So those who are attracted by the Vedic hymns, or you perform this tatamasya, you'll go to the heavenly planets. So one said, yes, I'm very attracted to this tree of the Vedas, representing how I can navigate through material existence in this way and that way. So if one is attracted by the green leaves of the Vedic hymns for different enjoyment or for fulfilling one's attachment and aversion, even with any of the processes of yoga and yoga runs, one must take a body and remain in this world. So therefore, you know, we quite often wonder what happens to many of the yogis and great yogis. It's very few, very rare, as mentioned in Gita, very rare that they attain liberation. Many of them, Prabhupada says in the books, most of them remain in this material world, you know, different upper planetary systems, Janaloka, Mahaloka, Natapaloka, yogis, cities, they still remain in this world. Sometimes we see them come to this world. So, therefore they remain. They remain. They're attracted to the Vedic hymns. So actually, this verse says that, but one who knows this tree means they know the purpose of the Vedas. If you know the purpose of the Vedas, you actually know of this tree and of material existence and the secret of getting out of material existence. And this is what Japanese is trying to teach Rahugana. How to utilize the Vedas to get out of material existence, not life after life, and, you know, as a yogi or as a siddha, you know, to remain in this material world according to the mental attachments and aversions. So Prabhupada begins that purport. He says, after discussions of the importance of bhakti yoga, one may question, what about the Vedas? It is explained in this chapter that the purpose of Vedic study is to understand Krishna. Of course, if we understand Krishna, we understand ourselves as well, because we are part and parcel of Krishna, part of his spiritual energy. Therefore, one who is Krishna conscious and who is engaged in devotional service already knows the Vedas. So Prabhupada summarizes the whole thing there. And he says that so this reflection, so this material world, of course, is a reflection of the spiritual world. What we're supposed to do is become detached from the material world and detached from the Vedic processes which cater to the mind's attachment and aversion to keep us in this world. So certain parts of the Vedas we're supposed to detach from, just take the real purpose, rest detached from. Ultimately, we have to detach from. And we have to attach to Krishna and the spiritual world and our eternal activities in the spiritual world. So this material world is an exact replica of the spiritual world. In other words, the spiritual world is filled with living entities, each with individual identities, except their eternal and spiritual forms, and they're all engaged in different eternal activities. So there's eternal activities full of ripe, little blissful. So as there are activities in this world, and individuals, and personalities, all that exists in the spiritual world, except in its reality. So this is a reflection. So we have to detach from the material world and the Vedic processes which keep us in this material world, and we have to attach to the reality, the Supreme Lord, the spiritual world, and our undeterminable self, and our eternal activities in the spiritual world in relationship to the Supreme. So that is the process. One who knows that process is the knower of the actual Vedas and knows how to cut down this tree of material existence. That. So it describes here that the next verse, the branches of this tree extend downward and upward, nourished by the three modes of material nature. The twigs are the objects of the senses. This tree also has roots going down, and these are bound to the fruit of actions of human society. Now, in this verse here, we see that the materialistic mind, covering the living entity's soul, carries it to different species of life, so from Brahmaloka down to the lower species of life. Due to the mind, the living entity suffers or enjoys material distress and happiness. Being thus illusioned, the mind further creates pious and impious activities and their karma. So that's what's described in this verse, this particular verse of Gita 15.2. So let's look at how that happens. So we've got this banyan tree, and I've heard that in Calcutta, whether it's still there, I don't know, but there's a tree that's, Prabhupada says, 5 miles wide. Sense of 5 miles. But you don't know where it begins and ends, so people may think, it's probably parts that are being cut down, what have you, but the roots will be over there somewhere. In Prabhupada's time, it was still there. You don't know where you walk around the city for 5 miles, that's a long way, but you don't know where it starts and where it ends. That's material existence like that. Because this body is a result of other bodies. Where did they begin? Since time immemorial. And where does it end? My activities in this life. Where will it end? What will happen to me as a result of everything I'm doing in this life, and I've still got reactions from the past life? What is my future? Just going to go on and on like the banyan tree. This body is putting down roots for my next body. Right now. That's what I'm trying to teach you in a bubble of time and stop that process. But, so, here it describes. So just before I get into that description, just that process, here of course Jagara, his father was Risha Bharat, his father was Risha. So these are the words of Risha of his grandfather. So in the Bhagavad Gita 5.2, you get this, it quotes this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.4-6. That people are mad after sense gratification. So we don't just see that in ordinary people, but we also see it in yogis sometimes. But we think, and we see it in Indra, we see it in demigods. But sometimes, when sense gratification, for sense gratification, people go mad. So that's from the top to the bottom, there's madness. Therefore, we say thousand-eyed Indra. There's a whole task on to go with that. So people are mad after sense gratification. And they do not know that this present body, which is full of miseries, is a result of one's fruitive activities in the past. Although this body is temporary, it is always giving one trouble in many ways. So we say, oh, okay, you know, I've got this body, it's a result of my past body, it's only temporary, that's okay. It'll just give me trouble from start to finish. You know, if you sit down, I wouldn't try it, Mr. President, but if you sit down and reflect on all the suffering and difficulties in your life, it's constant. And then, you know, so you've got this huge mountain of memories, and then you reflect on the few times you've actually enjoyed yourself, so you've got these little, few little grains in your mind. So it's temporary, a lot of misery. Therefore, to act for sense gratification is not good. One is considered to be a failure in life as long as he makes no inquiry as to his real identity. Again, searching for the nature of the self, separate, so the eternal self, which doesn't have to endure this repeated birth and death, is the clue that as long as one does not know his real identity, he has to work for fruitive results in sense gratification. If we don't know that we're a spirit soul, we must engage in fruitive results, whether we are an ordinary person, even a jnani, or even a yogi. And as long as one is engrossed in the consciousness of sense gratification, one has to transmigrate from one body to another. Although the mind may be engrossed in fruitive activities and influenced by ignorance, one must develop a love for the devotional service, devasadai. Only then can one have the opportunity to get out of the bondage of material existence. Same point. Despite the fact that we're in ignorance, identifying the body, absorbed in so many activities, somehow for different comforts of the mind and the body in this world, life after life, despite that, we have to, amidst all that, try, as Prabhupada says, must develop devotional service to the Lord, Vasudeva. So in the midst of all that, we just have to, you know, break away from it and just say, I'm going to try to develop this connection of the soul between the Supreme Soul. Despite that, despite the situation I'm in, I'm going to do that. And it says that's the only way to get out of birth and death. There is no other way. And that is repeated again and again in the Vedas and in the Bhagavad Gita. There is no other way. Not by karma, not by jnana, not by yoga, you know, sangha yoga. There is no other way. So here, in this, so this material life is going on and on and on again. So this process, it describes that the twigs of the tree, we come back to our tree, are considered to be the sense objects. By development of the different modes of nature, we develop different senses, and by the sense, we enjoy different varieties of sense objects. The tips of the branches of the senses, the eyes, nose, eyes, etc., which are attached to the enjoyment of different sense objects. The twigs are sound, form, touch, and so on, the sense objects. Right? So this is the first part. But the body, our previous bodies, have caused this body. We have all these senses. And this world is full of sense objects. And the senses are attached to those senses. Such are the one famous sort of pillar of the musical industry just passed away. And of course, many of the elite musicians in Australia and around the world attended his funeral. But also, we're ceremony on Saturday, but that's not the show. So, on the request of some of those verses. People, for the senses attracted to sound is a billion-dollar industry, isn't it? Quite often, you know, we do see that a lot of the our attraction to various subtle or gross sense objects can always come back to sex desire, which is sort of like the pivot of everything. Plus. So, but there are, you know, there are sounds which there are even modern music which, you know, tries to, which doesn't glorify such a process of doing everything on the basis of sex attraction. The yamis, and the yogis, and the kamis, they're attracted by the sound of the Vedas. But it's still for, there's some attachment and aversion there, within. So it's the same process. Same process that affects everyone. You have senses. The sense objects are there in one form or another. Now, then what is the next? The next thing is that the subsidiary roots are attachments and aversions which are byproducts of different varieties of suffering and sense enjoyment. So because of these senses coming into contact with the sense objects, such as gross, we get a different sense of happiness and stress. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 2.14, that we have to tolerate, you know, the happiness and distress of this world, as long because the senses, we have these senses, and they create our happiness and distress. And from that happiness and distress, then we become attached to some sense objects and sources of happiness, and we're averse to others, according to the level of wrong. So the things that the average person at the local hotel may be enjoying, you know, some of the strict followers of the religious principles may not be, that they'll be averse to that, but they're still attached to something. Which is, but still, it, you know, maybe some heavenly pleasures, what have you. So it's the same process with that. The mind, which is the pivot of all of this, being on the mental platform. Because this, remember, the yogic process is to stop the mind from doing it. But this is what happens. The mind, you know, we have this body, the senses attracted to the sense objects, somehow or another, we have our attachments and aversions, and they are the secondary roots. So in other words, the branches are like, you know, we've created this body, but this body is then creating our next body because our attachments and aversions, according to our happiness and distress, according to the mind, are actually putting down roots for our next body, subsidiary roots. And what are those subsidiary roots? It says that the tendency toward piety and impiety are considered to develop from these secondary roots, which spread in all directions. So these pious activities of the Vedas are also, the subsidiary roots, which come from the attachment and aversion. So the result of our attachment and aversion, which comes from our happiness and distress, according to the senses, connected with the sense objects, will give us an inclination to perform certain types of good and bad activities, and we look through the scriptures to find how we can fulfill those. And by that, we create the next body. So, therefore, we have to solve the problem of the mind. And if we do that, that whole process stops. And if we follow religious scriptures on that mental platform of attachment and aversion, we will take body after body after body. So, therefore,
we have to attract the mind away from material attractions and give it some spiritual attraction, whereby we get a higher taste. Therefore, in verse 6 of the same verse, Krishna presents his supreme abode. That supreme abode of mind is not illumined by the sun, the moon, or by fire or electricity, and those who reach it never return to the material world. If you become attracted to the spiritual world, you will never take birth again. You will cut that cycle of taking, you know, repeated birth and death in this material world. Prabhupada explains in that purport, once you be captivated by this information, he should desire to transfer himself to that eternal world and extricate himself from this false reflection of reality. For one who is too much attached to this material world, it is very difficult to cut that attachment. But if he takes the Krishna consciousness, there is a chance of gradually becoming detached. One has to associate himself with devotees, those who are Krishna conscious. One should search out a society dedicated to Krishna consciousness and learn how to discharge devotional service. In this way, he can cut off his attachment to the material world. One cannot be detached from the attraction of the material world simply by dressing himself in saffron cloth. He must be attached to the devotional service of the Lord. So, this devotional service is presented that this is the process, because it is very attractive. Fixing one's mind on the spiritual world and the personality of Godhead will allow one to go there. And the devotional process allows one to go there. Prabhupada mentioned, therefore, up until this point, although Krishna has presented the various other yogi processes and paths of the way, all the different paths, the Bhamasram, everything, he has repeatedly stressed, put these aside and take to the devotional service because they are inferior and this is superior. These other paths do have a role if one follows the Vedic processes with the goal of understanding the self. They will bring one to the point where one can gradually take up devotional service. But if one follows the Vedic processes without that goal, they're going round and round in circles according to the attachment conversion, just putting down the roots. So, therefore, Prabhupada says in chapter 14, the contamination of all kinds of processes of material nature is described. Only devotional service is described as purely transcendental. I remember reading this before I ever met a devotee. I found Prabhupada's book, and you know, this section here, that one should search out a society dedicated to Krishna consciousness. So when I found Prabhupada's books, I didn't know there was a Hare Krishna movement. You know, I might have seen maybe once or twice a few Hare Krishnas. I didn't know there was a whole organized society where you can actually, you know, learn the processes. But so when I read this, I was thinking, gee, you know, if there's a society like that, I'd like to join it. But I didn't know it existed. Then when I saw the devotees finally up close, and I said, I'll come back to the temple, I'm thinking, gee, you know, these are their books. And you know, there's a whole, you know, there is a whole society. So Prabhupada has presented this Krishna consciousness movement for that purpose, that one can take up devotional service. And in Kali Yuga, it's not possible to follow this slow process, getting lost in the Vedas. You know, people may take an interest in the Vedas for all sorts of materialistic attachments and aversions these days. But if someone just quotes one or two little, you know, things of knowledge from the Vedas, people take it, oh, you know, it's just from the Vedas. You know, people take it that, you know, you must be knowledgeable, you're giving this information from the Vedas. But there's practically no value in the way people utilize the Vedic knowledge. Practically it's a waste of time. And for a lot of people, it is actually the greatest disservice to present something from the Vedas as this is the important things of the Vedas. Like, you know, so quite often there are a lot of yoga schools and yoga societies and gurus even in Melbourne. And if you go there, which I generally don't, you read books, you know, and they're books that will be teaching the teacher and saying the main purpose of the Vedas is the aphorism, tattvamasi. You are that supreme Brahman. That's what they're teaching you. You are the supreme Brahman. That Brahman which is supreme, you are that tattvamasi. What they should be saying is Krishna, tattvamasi, you are the supreme Brahman. And I am one with the Supreme Brahman because I have the same spiritual qualities as the Supreme Brahman. Only difference is, I'm infinitesimal and he's infinite. And Krishna describes that in the seventh verse, the next verse. He says, the living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. Again, we come back to the mind, and that the soul, why is the soul struggling with the mind? Because we are not supreme. We are controlled at every step by the supreme, by his energies. The will is supreme. How would we fall to the position? How does the Supreme fall to the position where we're controlled by ignorance and the covering of these senses and illusion in this material world? Does that sound very supreme? So someone asked me, how are you the Supreme? I'll give my qualifications as the Acharya say. My life is a treasure house of miseries. Oh, you should definitely go. Is that, you know, that's your way to bad, you must be God. Sound very supreme to me. Struggling with the mind, and we claim, yes, you are, that time I see you are that supreme. So, therefore, now, here, so here it says here, the living entities, not only human beings and cats and dogs, but even the great controllers in the material world, Brahma, Lord Shiva, and even Vishnu, are all parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. Brahma, Shiva, they're not supreme. They're parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. Vishnu is also an expansion of the Supreme Lord, but he is on the level of a personal expansion of the Lord himself. They are all eternal, not temporary manifestations. The word karsati, struggling or grappling hard, is very significant. The conditioned soul is bound up as though shackled by iron chains. So we are claiming to be that karma. I am supreme, and yet we are, so we are unlimited, but our whole existence is bound, very limited.
The conditioned soul is bound up as though shackled by iron chains. He is bound up by the false ego, and the mind is the chief agent which is driving him in his material existence. In the Bhagavad Gita, we see, Prabhupada explains that what happens is that the senses are attracted to the sense objects. And this last, attraction, desires, and material existence, the existence within our senses takes over. The senses all become agitated. Then, this attraction, this lust, enters the mind, the heart, and the mind then fills with all sorts of ideas about how to enjoy the senses according to its attachments and illusions, and what will bring happiness, what will avoid distress. And then the intelligence gives the, you will fulfill that desire by doing this in this way, going in this direction, do this, follow this way you can, whatever, do this, impious activity, whatever, intelligence. The intelligence, Prabhupada says, is the next door neighbor to the soul and influences the soul to accept the false ego by where one accepts his mind and his subtle body, gross body, as the self and source of their happiness and stress. So it is the mind, if we can stop that process of the mind and its attraction and aversion according to happiness and stress, we can actually stop the process of the false ego kicking in and the intelligence being lost and being controlled by the senses. So it comes back to the mind. Therefore, Krishna says, they're all struggling with the mind. So that again, the mind is the center. So, I'll just go summarize with one verse from the Bhagavad Gita 5:20, what Krishna describes. So, now, in that section there, Prabhupada also mentioned in one of those verses that we cannot stop the process of the mind just by renunciation, or sometimes he says just by accepting self-control. That many persons, when they take to spiritual life, they consider this mind engages me in all these material activities according to my attachments and aversions. If I stop these material activities, then I'll be free. But it doesn't work. The mind has to have some higher engagement. You cannot just take to spirit. And therefore we see in many spiritual institutions around the world that even the highest level of spiritual leaders in them who've taken to the path of renunciation of material activities fall down. And that is the problem. So in this verse, in chapter 5, Arjuna asks the question as to which is better, that working devotion or renunciation of work. And Krishna says, the renunciation of work and working devotion are both good for liberation, but of the two, working devotion service is better than renunciation of work. I quoted that verse from Risha from that chapter previously. That now in the purport, Prabhupada mentions jnana, or knowledge that one is not a mature body but spirit soul, is not sufficient for liberation. So even if one becomes a jnani or a yogi or one spirit, thus one has to act in the status of spirit soul, otherwise there is no escape from material bondage. Action in Krishna consciousness is not, however, action on the fruited platform. Activities performed in full knowledge strengthen one's advancement in real knowledge. I love that statement. So we understand I'm a spirit soul, and we perform all our activities as a spirit soul,
it strengthens our realization and understanding that of that knowledge. Any science, you study any science, medicine, this, that, and the other, even how to build, you know, carpentry, you get some teachings. If you don't practice it, you don't get the certificate. If you can't practice it, there's no certificate. Someone says, oh yes, I'm an electrician. Okay. Change that light switch without killing you. If you don't know what to do, you no certificate. Oh, I studied the books, passed all the exam, that's okay. Until you can practice it, we still don't know. You know, but we practice it, and the knowledge, realize, therefore you have builders, and you have master builders. Why don't master builders? Practice, 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 practice. Go to Swami. Practice, 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 master. I am spirit soul, or I am the supreme soul, that's not useless. You actually have to, because the soul, you have to act on that platform, and that strengthens that knowledge. And that is only available in the Bhagavad service. He says, without Krishna consciousness, mere renunciation of fruitive activities does not actually purify the heart of the conditioned soul. That's another problem. I give up my material activities, but my mind is still attracted. You know, there's still the attachment and aversion there in the mind. Physically, things are going on, but it's also they've stopped. But in my mind, the same activities are going on, and they gradually lead to poverty, even for the yogis. And therefore, you see, you know, Prabhupada quotes here, "Savaya manaha Krishna padaro nayo." And he quotes this, and this is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 261. He quotes Ambarish Maharaj that Krishna says, and this is one of the essential teachings of the summary of the whole topic of Krishna consciousness of Bhagavad Gita 261. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as man of steady intelligence. And in there, he gives the example of Maharaj Ambarish, Savaya Maha Krishna Padava Vindaro, because he was engaged in always thinking of Krishna, all his senses were automatically engaged. As we said, from the senses, they gradually control the mind, the sense gratification then takes intelligence, the false ego kicks in, like that. But the other process, to fix the mind on Krishna, it is a direct connection between the soul and the supreme, with spiritual activities that purify the tendency to sense gratification, because one's developing love, the bliss of loving activities of the supreme Lord, and all the senses are enjoying in the spiritual atmosphere, varieties of spiritual enjoyment, just as we do in the temple, or in preaching, or in family life, in Krishna consciousness. So there is purification, and it stops the mind, the soul just directly associates with the Supreme, and therefore, that whole other process of the material intelligence, the false ego, and the material senses contacting their sense objects is stopped. The whole process of attachment and aversion stopped. The whole process of happiness and distress stopped. Whereas Devasa, mentioned in this verse, he tells the story. Devasa picked a quarrel with Ambarish. Devasa is one of the greatest yogis with the greatest associations, the greatest knowledge of the Vedas that you can imagine. Topmost level of the Rama Prakash, as a little bit lucky, but very elevated to other processes. He couldn't control his attachment and aversions because the mind is still there, because it's not fixed on the Lord. He became his senses, his mind became again the mind. False pride. Oh, Ambarish, you're getting some credit for being some great personality. You're nothing. I'm that person. I want that credit. that false prestige is mine. He becomes angry. He wants to, cause harm to the devotee. Innocent and going about his business. He's picking the quarrel. So, although with all the years and lifetimes of coming to that point, he then just acts like a naughty child, throwing his tantrum. Isn't it? Because you cannot, and these instances are there to show, you cannot get out of material existence unless your mind is fixed in the spiritual pleasure of devotional service upon the lotus feet of the Lord, and you're constantly engaged in those devotional activities. And I told you a lie, I was going to read one of this, but I'm going to read one last one, and then we'll finish. But this one here, very dear. Therefore, Krishna says, one who neither hates nor desires the fruits of his activities is known to be always renounced. So the mind, no attachment, no aversion, according to one's sense of happiness and stress. Such a person, free from all dualities, loss of gain, victory, defeat, profit and loss, easily overcomes material bondage and is completely liberated by mighty armed Arjuna. So therefore, one who engages in devotional service, they immediately come to the liberated platform above, and that is what Maharaj, and that is what Jagannath is trying to teach Maharaj Rudra. Okay, any quick questions or comments about that? Doing good? Yeah, thank you. Hare Krishna.